Do you want to know what's really fun about being a woman?
This is starting to sound like a Shania Twain song.
Man, I feel like I'm in perimenopause. Ugh, the brain fog, the mood swings, the night sweats, the unpredictable cycles. Many women enter perimenopause and they don't even realize what's happening to their body, and it's directly impacting how they're making major life decisions.
You get divorce strategy on this podcast, but when it comes to strategy for what's happening inside your body, our friends at Natural Cycles are here to help. Their new app mode, NC Perimenopause, within the Natural Cycles app interprets those hormonal shifts with data and science.
So I'm currently using the app and the intel is fascinating. It doesn't just track symptoms. It helps me see patterns and it helps me connect the dots between my hormones, my symptoms, and my lifestyle. It even estimates what stage of perimenopause I'm in. I love that it helps me better understand what's going on with my body and why I have days where it's more difficult to make decisions than others. And that clarity really matters. You can even download a personalized report that you can bring to your doctor, which makes those appointments way more productive.
Natural Cycles is a female-founded digital health company that analyzes biomarker data to help users better understand their cycles. NC Perimenopause is for anyone experiencing or anyone who thinks they may be experiencing perimenopause, from the first hormone-related changes to your cycle or symptoms all the way until menopause, when your periods stop. Learn more and give it a shot right alongside Andrea.
Yes, let's do this thing together. You are not alone in your divorce or this transition. There are tools to help you make sense of what your body is doing. Visit naturalcycles.com and use code DIVORCE. Or tap the link in the show notes to learn more about how you can save on a subscription.
The How Not to Suck a Divorce podcast cannot be copied or rebroadcast without consent. This podcast does not contain legal advice. The information provided on the podcast and the resources available are not intended as and shall not be construed or understood to be legal advice.
For our listeners who want even more support, we are proud to let you know that we have more ways to help you. Please go join our How Not to Suck at Divorce community on Facebook. There's a direct link to that in the show notes of this episode. And if you are in a situation where you need to listen to these episodes discreetly, maybe you haven't filed yet and you don't want your soon-to-be ex to know that you're listening to a show called How Not to Suck at Divorce, please find our subscription channel on Patreon, Not Quite Ready to Divorce. Direct link to that in our show notes. As always, we're doing everything that we can to help you, give you the information and guidance you need to get you through this process.
I wasn't ready to accept what it might look like to let go of that control.
And this is How Not to Suck at Divorce. Okay, so this is a first. We're starting this episode of How Not to Suck a Divorce with just me, because Morgan is slammed with clients and she just sent me a text saying, girl, you're going to have to do the opening. I will be there as soon as I can, but I am back to back to back with people right now because, as you all know, we're still in the month of January. This is the biggest season for people filing for divorce. So, and I'm sure a lot of you are nodding your heads because you're like, yeah, I'm right there. So Morgan is going to be here any minute now, and I'm going to hold down the fort until she gets here. I want to talk about something for a minute before we get into our interview today, which is going to be a real life story. Somebody who went through a really rocky marriage and divorce, and then decided while she was going through her process that she wasn't going to let these things that quote unquote happened to her dictate the rest of her life. So I'm really looking forward to being able to share that with you guys because I think it's a really important message. And it's tied to what I want to talk about right now, which is even when you're on the other side of your divorce, there's going to be things that come up that just frustrate you and shake you and feel like, God, am I ever going to be in a place where I don't have to deal with this kind of headache? And I don't know the answer. I don't know that there's ever a point, especially if you're co-parenting and especially if you're co-parenting with someone who doesn't want to co-parent with you. And it's a lot. It can feel draining. It can feel sad and isolating. And I just want you to know that you are not the only one who's going through that. So when you feel like you are, find a community. Join our private community on Facebook. We talk about this kind of stuff all the time. You can message me on Instagram. You can message our show's page. We're here for you. We're here to support you. These moments that you're just like, my God, am I ever going to get through this? You will. And remember that you have the ability to look at a situation in more than one way. And even if things are feeling like complete shit in your life, you have the ability to look at your life and say, okay, my life is not complete shit. What I'm going through right now sucks. And my kids are suffering and that sucks. And I am frustrated and I am worried and I'm tired. That can all be valid. But there are good things going on. And there are going to be times where you're going to have to cling on to those good things like a piece of driftwood going upstream a river. But do that. I promise it will save you. All right. Let's talk to our guest. Okay, so I promised you guys a real life story, and here we go. We are talking to Monica Lee. You might already follow her on Instagram because she has some reels that went mega viral, and she is going to talk about exactly what I was just getting into before, which is a lot of this stuff that you have gone through. It is your choice how you respond to it. You might not have a choice of what you went through, but you have a choice on whether it's going to affect the rest of your life. So with that, hi, Monica. Welcome to How Not to Suck at Divorce.
Thank you so much. That was quite the intro. Oh my gosh, you're a pro at that.
I know, I've done this a few times. But yeah. One thing I forgot to mention is that Monica has her own podcast. Monica is the host of the Choosing to Heal podcast, and her handle on Instagram is Monica Lee Blog. Right?
Yes, I got that right. That's right. Yep.
So Monica, let's hop right in. I'm excited to hear about this viral, you know, thing, this reel, you know, for people who are not so into Instagram, but apparently you had this reel that went completely viral. Tell us about that.
Yeah. And I think that might be how Andrea and I got connected. But essentially it was a B-roll clip of my ex-husband sitting at Thanksgiving dinner with my now boyfriend and all of our four kids together. And was just talking about how divorce doesn't have to mean war, you know, and how it's really important for us to bring our kids together. And even though, you know, our marriage didn't obviously didn't work out, That was it. It was just like a little behind the scenes clip, and people in the comments were outraged. They just couldn't fathom the idea. And that just goes to show, I think, how rare it is. It is to have two people who ended a relationship for reasons like it wasn't working in the relationship and how it's quite a challenge and a journey to get to that place. And I'm happy to share my story because I think that it will color and illustrate how we got there sitting at that Thanksgiving dinner table, especially considering just the history of what we did go through in our marriage.
I think that's what gets a lot of people, because I think a lot of people who follow you, they're going through stuff, right? Mm-hmm. And then they see this reel and they think, I'm never going to have that. That's never going to be me. And then they become really irritated that you're in a different place. And then people who know your backstory, which we're about to get into, I think they're like, well, how did she do that? Like, what did she just forget everything? Like, what did she just black out and forget all these horrible things that happened? And now she's sitting at the same table. So I know we're going to get into how you quote unquote forgot, which I know that that's not what you did, but let's talk about what happened.
Sure. Yeah. So, it's so hard to do the Cliff Notes version, but I will do my best. Yeah. So my ex-husband and I, we got married very young, and we had no idea who we were. And back in that era, I really just wanted to feel chosen. And I was all of this was unconscious, of course, right? And so I just latched on to the first available person and decided I would do everything in my power to, you know, make him my husband.
Yeah.
And so
sounds familiar.
Yeah. Fast forward 8 years later, you know, a lot of our marriage was me unhappy in the relationship, criticizing him, and we had a very anxious, avoidant dynamic, right? And so that played out with me being critical and wanting to change and control him, and then him responding by withdrawing and shutting down, which only made me, you know, want to be more that way to try to get my needs met, which at the time, again, like I had no idea what my core values were. We had no foundation of shared anything, really. And so that manifested in our marriage. Like I said, fast forward, we had a son together. And I started a business that got very busy and successful for the first time. And so I spent so much of my time really making that a priority. Long story short, the way that my ex-husband at the time dealt with the fallout and just, you know how it is, right? Like over time, marriage is just kind of that foundation. It chips away and the bitterness and the resentment starts to seep in. And the way that he coped was with alcohol and with porn, and that turned, so, you know, a lot of addictive behaviors, they coexist. And yeah. And so one day it all came to the surface and he sat me down and he said, Monica, he just let it all out. And he shared how, his sex addiction had taken him outside of our marriage. And as you can imagine, my life as I knew it just completely crumpled to the ashes. So that was where I say the beginning of my healing journey really began, was that day.
That's so interesting. I mean, a lot of times what I see with my clients too, who are dealing with this, especially you kind of said you were A-type, a little bit controlling. You probably didn't know it at the time, but
right.
So I see that a lot with my clients trying to control the situation when it's not controllable, and then it implodes and they sometimes almost take a more strong hard line, which makes it worse. So, you know, he comes to you at that point. You didn't see it coming, I assume. What do you do at that point in time?
Right. Yeah, that's a great question. So I feel like there are different phases for sure. And so the first stage that I experienced was I felt like a victim, right? And so I was I was mourning the life that I thought we had. Everything felt like a lie. I felt unlovable. I felt, you know, unwanted, and just all of the things that come up, not even if there is no infidelity, right? Even with porn in general, like that can create such feelings of insecurity and it takes its own toll on the relationship. And so I think the first phase that I was and was just feeling sorry for myself and like, I don't understand, how did I see this coming? What did I do wrong to deserve this? So I stayed there for quite a while. And then, I don't know timeline, but the next phase I moved into was anger. And that was just all directed towards him, right? And so as you mentioned, Morgan, that's a really great point. Prior to this, I wasn't aware of my own contributions to the marriage. And so when I was in that angry phase, it was all his fault.
Right.
And I wanted him to fix it. And so talk about type A, it got so much worse. You're right. Because so now it was you're going to rehab or else. And so it was what I had considered to be boundaries. They weren't boundaries. They were ultimatums. And anything, though, to make me feel safe in the marriage and to, like, you know, let's go to therapy. I want to see you going into all of these support groups, recovery groups. And I moved into this kind of manager type role in the marriage then. And that's because when it all comes down to it, you know, looking in hindsight, I wasn't ready to accept or face the reality of what it might look like to let go of that control. And so that was my way of staying in denial. Mm-hmm. Right? Is if I let go and I stop making him or trying to fix him or trying to save this marriage, it might mean that he's not actually willing to fight for this as much as I do. And I did not want to be faced with that reality. I stayed in
do
that.
Do you mm-hmm. remember when you were in that I'm going to save this marriage mode? Were you loving towards him, or were you angrily trying to save the marriage? Meaning, because I think a lot of people go through this, on the outside, they're saying, okay, well, then we're going to do therapy. Mm-hmm. We're going to save this marriage. But then in the kitchen, you're looking at him and you're like, seriously, motherfucker, you're going to leave dishes in the sink after everything you've done to me?
You're like a mom. You're like a mom, right? To your spouse at that point. And it's just,
because it shifts, the energy shifts. So what I'm curious to know is, do you remember where you were at?
Yeah, definitely. So it went between two extremes. It was very black and white at that time. And so it was exactly like you just described in the kitchen. Anything would set me off into just lashing out. And I became the worst version of myself during that time. However, I think what kept me going and what motivated me to continue to want to fight for our marriage was the idea of what our story could be, as opposed to the reality of what it was. And so what I mean by that is I wanted to have that testimony. I wanted to have that story of redemption and to go to church and to see the video up on screen with the emotional music playing and how, you know, my husband was chained to his addictions and then God set us free. And now we have this amazing, incredible marriage.
Right.
And I held on to that hope for so long. And so I would look at him through this filter of, I hate you for hurting me this badly. And also, it kills me that the person that I love hurt me this badly. And I want that back, right? Mm-hmm. Like, I want to have that loving relationship. So I hope that answers your question.
It sounds like the breakup that you went through was not only with your husband, but it was with the idea that you had put in your mind of how things would be. And absolutely. I think a lot of people want to be that hero. We want, I mean, what you just described is going to land with so many people because, I mean, you have an event that happens. And I also think that probably from your ex-husband's perspective, he's like, look, I came to you with this,
yes,
right? Like, it's not like you caught me with my pants down and a hooker. Like, I came to you and sat you down and said, I love you and I'm struggling and this is what I've done, right? So he wants that redemption. You're in this spot of like, I've been blindsided by this. What do we do? I'm angry. I'm confused. And you also knew in the background on some level that there was something more going on.
Yep.
But I think in the moment you get just, I mean, and I know Morgan talks about this all the time. When a client first comes through her door, they're in like the eye of the storm. Mm-hmm. There's so much swirling around. It's so hard for them to see. And it's sometimes Morgan's job to help them like, okay, we got to roadmap this out and you are going to be okay. And it's really hard to tell someone initially when they come in, he cheated on me, this happened, she did this, he did that. It's really hard to look at them and say, yes, I understand, but you're not the victim. Right? Like, that is not what someone wants to hear. Mm-hmm. Well, but what I want to know, yeah, go ahead.
I mean, one of the things that divorce lawyers say kind of off the cuff to one another, I'm going to let you in on a little secret, is, you know, two people find each other for a reason. And we don't always know what that reason is as divorce lawyers. And I don't think a couple knows exactly why they found each other. It could be they complement each other in certain ways. It could be that they don't complement each other in certain ways. They kind of agitate each other, but it works for them. So when it implodes, we always say it's not just one person's fault. It takes two to tango. And a lot of times in these situations, Monica, with what you are going through, I mean, you're thinking to yourself, what the hell just happened in my life? And now you're like, I'm going to fix this because this is not me at all. And you go into fix it mode. And a lot of people will stay in fix it mode for a long time. And what ends up happening, depending on how long fix it mode goes for, you start losing yourself because your needs are not getting met. And what I see is sometimes a lot of people come in right when this happens, you know, they found out, then they go, then they don't hire me because they're not ready, which is totally acceptable. They go into fix it mode for a long time. By the time I see them again, they are so exhausted, so worn out, and they feel like a failure because they couldn't fix it. And you can't just be one person fixing it.
Yeah,
What did your fix-it mode look like? I mean, we know what was going on at home, but did you do therapy? What were you doing?
Yeah. So for about a year and a half following D-Day is what we call it, Disclosure Day, when it all comes to the surface. Both of us started individual therapy. We were in couples therapy, and I joined a support group with other partners of betrayed spouses. And it's really interesting that you mentioned, Morgan, how people will, they won't, it's so hard to realize like that you're doing something to contribute. So in fix it mode, not only was I holding on to the hope, but when I started to develop awareness to my own contributions, I wasn't condoning or excusing his behavior, but I was able to have my eyes open and see, oh, shoot, I've also been contributing to this dysfunction. And that gave me even more hope. Like, then maybe if I fix myself, if I can learn how to let go of control, if I can stop doing the things that created this distance in our relationship from my side of the street, then maybe there's even more hope. And so fix-it mode looked like, you know, issuing those ultimatums and really like having a finger on the pulse of what his recovery looked like. But then also it was being in roadrunner mode of trying to fix and heal myself in hopes that, and this is where it's so interesting, I wanted to heal not for myself. Really, my unconscious motivation for healing was to save my marriage and to change him. And use that as like a manipulation and a tool for getting the outcome that I wanted. So really, it was quite the journey. I thought I was healing, but man, it was just the beginning.
It's really interesting you say that, because that's what we're talking about today is really, you know, you've gone through a crappy experience in your marriage and you don't kind of know where you're going. And then what you did is kind of flip it on its head and try to fix yourself, which most people would be like, what the hell am I fixing myself for? This is a you problem. So the fact that you can step back and try to fix some things that maybe you contributed to says a lot. I'm wondering, you know, when I see clients come in, a lot of clients are in such a fight or flight mode when they have something like that happen. Most of them can't step back to do what you have done. So my question is, how would you suggest that somebody do that? What's the first step that you think could be helpful?
Yeah, man, that is so hard. And I remember when I was in that place, that fight or fight place, I wanted the handbook and for someone to tell me. I wanted to listen to a podcast episode where they would tell me exactly what to do to get out of this fight or fight place, because I so badly wanted to be in that space of acceptance or whatever I had to do to have that peace in my life. And this is going to sound so cliche, but for me, it was learning the art of acceptance, which is a practice, right? And so it's a practice, meaning it's something that you have to learn how to do and do over and over again. That's also the practice of letting go. And what for me, what the biggest light bulb moment that I had where I was able to make this big shift from fight or flight fix it mode to a space of, oh, wait, like, and being able to separate myself from that enmeshment that was happening in the marriage was when I realized that my controlling him had a direct correlation to his actions, and that I can try to change this person in front of me and he may do it, but he's going to do it so I get off of his back. And so then am I really getting what I want? If what I want from him is, you know, more attention or whatever it is, if he's doing it only because I'm on his back about it, or I'm nagging him, or I'm manipulating him in some way to do it, that's not authentic. That's not pure love. And so I realized, I had this epiphany, like, oh my gosh, if I step back, which was scary to fight or flight Monica, right? Like, that was my biggest fear, was what's going to happen if I stop trying to fix this. But when I realized that would give me so many answers, because the minute that I let go and I take my foot off of his throat, I get to see and observe how he is going to show up in this relationship without my involvement, without my influence, without anything that I'm doing to make it happen. And that right there was the answer. You know, is he going to prioritize this in a way that I then get to decide, is that enough for me? So I kind of transitioned into this period of observation where, and for him, I think it was, he definitely noticed that shift. And so it took a while. On his part, there was a lot of fear, I think. And like, is this legit? Is this real? You know, is everything that she's doing, you know, because of course, when you're in that marriage, that type of relationship for so long, it's, you know, both people are living in so much fear. But then I did, I got to see his true colors. And that's how I arrived at the place where I knew and I had the clarity that I was ready to divorce was I finally learned how to accept my husband. Meaning, because what I was doing, when we're controlling, we're trying to change someone, we're not accepting them. We're not accepting them as they are. And so I was finally able to let go and say, okay, if I claim to love you as much as I say that I do, I'm going to let go and I'm going to accept you and all of your behavior and all of your choices as you are. And then I get to decide if that is enough, if that is what I want and need. And so I took that time of that period of observation to really do the healing work of figuring out what my values were, you know, and what do I want and need in a relationship. And then I kind of compared to what he was showing me. And that's how I arrived at that place.
Okay, let me ask you a question. During this process that you went through, and first of all, I can't believe you went through a year and a half of that shit. Like, I don't know whether to applaud you or to hit you over the head, but I mean, you do you. Now, did you fall out of love with him while you were, once you had that epiphany moment, which I would love to know, was that a moment or a series of moments? Because I think so often people sit around waiting for that Oprah light bulb moment to happen. And I think it's important to express to people, it's not like all of a sudden you're sitting in the car and you're like, ah, I've got it, right? It's a series of little moments that add up. And it always processes in the dark, right? Like your therapist might say something to you and you're like, yeah, that kind of makes sense. And it's not until like hours later that you're like, oh, okay. Like we hear something and then we see the evidence and then it all kind of comes together. So know that, people. Don't wait for something to come all at once and then you're like, boom, I'm a changed person. Now I'm no longer a victim. But Monica, you keep talking about waiting for him to change. And what I'm wondering is, was it you who really changed during that? And then it would be like, you know what, buddy? No, your 100% would probably never be enough for me.
Absolutely. You hit the nail on the head, Andrea, with my decision to divorce was not a result of the betrayal. It was a result of the healing process that I went
Amazing.
Through. And when I discovered and I was able to grieve the person I was, the version of myself that attracted him into my life, I realized it clicked into place. Like, this isn't about him. This is about the ways that I've been betraying myself, the ways that I haven't known myself, the ways that I have been trying to get my needs met in these unhealthy ways that haven't ever worked for me. And yeah, that's exactly right. That's how I came to that decision. But to address you mentioned, was it like a light bulb moment or a series of events? During that period of observation, I'll call it. He was showing me things that I wasn't happy with, right? But rather than getting angry and doing my normal, like, reactive response to try to get him to be different, I was like, okay, putting that in my back pocket, taking a mental note, you know. And it wasn't until I had a phone call with one of my best friends at the time. And during this process too, we would fall into like the ugly ass arguments, you know, which ones, like where you end up crying on the closet floor and you're in extreme fight or flight mode, like you're completely dysregulated. So that would also happen in the midst of all of this. It wasn't like this year and a half of just like, oh, la-di-da, we're healing now. And so it was a night that another one of those happened. And I think it's because, again, right, I was wrestling with that version of myself that wanted that outcome so badly and this new version of myself that was kind of developing more and more awareness, and they were clashing. Right. And I didn't know how to handle that. So I called my best friend, and she had a marriage that I envied for so long. And when I was married, before I even knew about the betrayal, I would look at their marriage and I was like, there's no way that's real, right? Like, there's got to be something behind closed doors that I'm just not seeing, because no marriage is perfect. There's always a compromise, anything to make my reality seem normal. And I called her and I was like, Amy, is this like, it, does it have to be this hard? Like, what you guys have, is that for real? And I remember we were FaceTiming and she looked at me and she's like, Monica, I guess I never realized how bad it was that you were even doubting its existence. And not only is it real, you deserve to know what that's like. And I don't know what it was. Maybe it was just her telling me what I had already known, or the confirmation. But I think at that point was maybe when this new version of me kind of just blossomed to a place where, you know, that I was finally able to let go of that version of myself that was just holding on for dear life. And yeah.
Well, I want to say thank you to you for one thing, because sometimes we get these guests on here that want to tell us, like, with all the therapy in the world, they just did divorce beautifully. And they make it seem like it's like flowers and sunshine. And what you're saying, I appreciate, because you're saying, look, you did it really actually in a beautiful manner, if there is such a thing in divorce, but it wasn't straight line. And there were those gross, ugly fights that you had. So my question is, you know, at this point, you're going through all this stuff, and for quite some time, what does the conversation look like with your husband? Like, all right, we're at the end of our road. We need to, you know, get this divorce, and I'm filing and we're going forward. What does that look like?
Yeah. So I wrote him a letter, and I wish I had it handy to reference it, but essentially, and that letter was so therapeutic. I walked him through my thought process, similar to what I had just walked all of you listening through. And I said, hey, we got married really young. You know, through the years, here's what I've learned about our relationship. And here's what I've learned about myself through the path, through this recovery process. And I affirmed his efforts. I affirmed his fears, his hurts. You know, I took accountability for my role, especially with, like, you know, the controlling and all of the things. And the end of that letter was, I want to accept you. And for me, what that looks like right now is allowing both of us to grow outside of the container of our marriage, because it's not serving either one of us anymore. And I don't want to stay in this relationship and not accept you, is what I told him. And, you know, and at the same time, like, I want you to be who you are, and you deserve someone in your life who not only accepts you, but that is what they need and want in a relationship. And so, yeah, I wrote him that letter. I gave him time to, you know, read it, and there's kind of silence and distance for a day, but that's how I told him.
Okay. My marketing brain has turned on, and I now have a great new career for you, Monica. So get ready for this. You are going to sell on Etsy breakup letter templates. So I think people can message you and say it's because of this, 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 and this. And maybe you fill it in like Mad Libs, or, you know, they decide how gentle they want to be it. But like, you wrote a letter? Like, what the? Morgan.
You're John.
Do people write letters? Like, is Monica like an anomaly here? Have you heard of other people write letters? And is that a, like, critique this
okay.
for me?
Okay. So, yes, I've heard of people writing letters. I think it all depends on where you're at. I'm a huge proponent, and I think we've talked about this, Andrea. So, like, if you're thinking, do I stay or do I go? I love the pro and con list, and that is so therapeutic. The pros of staying, the happy times that you have, but the cons. And, like, when I'm talking about the cons, I want you to write out all those nasty, awful fights and how you felt and who said what. Write those out, and then do the pros, because there's lovely times too. And when you are trying to really make that decision, when you go to that, that usually makes a pretty good decision for a person. But are the letters like happening all the time? No, not at all. But Monica, if that helped you and that was therapeutic and amazing, and clearly you kept a copy, Godspeed.
What I want to know is, what was his reaction to receiving the letter? The reason why I'm really intrigued here is because anyone who's been in therapy know that men are easily flooded with when you're talking, right? Like, you say one word that just lands in a way. Women are very different than the way men are with our wirings, and they can just shut down completely, right? I know this with my, with Steve, my fiance. If we have an argument, I can say something and then he'll be like, fuck, I'm gone, right? So I think that the idea of a letter is so interesting because they have time. It's tangible. It's right in front of them to like read it and then take a breath and then take a break and then come back to it. Whereas some of your words might have gone one in the ear and out the other. So what did he do?
Exactly. And that's why I chose to write the letter, is I wanted to make sure that I included everything. And when I'm talking face to face, I get, you know, dysregulated, I get flooded emotionally. And when I'm in that space, I can't think clearly, let alone communicate it. And so I really wanted to make sure that I, you know, processed through and also gave him that ability to, Andrea, just like you mentioned. His reaction, so before I get to that, to some backstory, you mentioned, Morgan, on the pros and cons list to include those nasty fights and also those words that stick with you, mm-hmm. right? Like once they say it, they just, you can't take it back. And one of those phrases in our marriage was, I remember him telling me, Monica, you don't want to know my answer, right? To all of my prodding. Why don't you this, this, and this? Do you just not care? Blah, blah, blah. I don't think you want to know my answer. And he told me one day, like, the answer is, I don't really love you, I think, as much as you want or need me to. And there's nothing that I can do to, like, I'm giving you my all.
Ouch.
And so when I gave him that letter,
boom, yeah,
mic drop.
I saw he didn't fight. He didn't try to, that wasn't, you know, and in that moment, I was serious as, you know, whatever. That unhealed part of me, that wanted to manipulate, would have used that as an opportunity to like, well, maybe this will get him to fight for me, you know? And so when he just didn't really have a reaction, I was like, he wasn't lying. And that's another part about like the accepting your divorce, is I finally decided to believe him, mm-hmm. you know?
So funny you say that, because I get a lot of clients that come in the door. They want to save the marriage. They don't want to file, but they're dealing with a bunch of BS at home and nothing is working and their home life is horrible. And sometimes I have to say to them, look, your spouse wants you to file for divorce. They don't have the ability to do it, but they are telling you, please do it for me, because they can't.
And read between the lines.
Yeah, it's a very difficult conversation to have with somebody who's not ready for it. But the reality is, if you're the one that's going home and it's miserable and they're not fighting for you and not fighting for that relationship, they may not have the ability to file themselves, but they are hoping you do it, because the minute you do it, it gives them the like, oh, thank God. You know, somebody did this.
Yep.
And this is something that we've talked about several times in many different ways on our show, but something that discernment counseling for someone who is vacillating between are we doing the right thing? Are we fighting? Are we not fighting to keep this marriage? Kind of shows you, like, what are you fighting for? And is there somebody on the other side fighting this with exactly. you? Or is it just you that like got the death grip on this marriage that you can let go of? And I think something that you said before is really important. You had this idea in your head, and going back to the story that you told about envisioning you on the big screen at church, right? With like the dramatic music playing, and how Monica saved her marriage and now she's a hero and an inspiration. And I hate that. I hate this rhetoric that flies around. And now I'm going to get emotional, and I want to change this, because saving a marriage does not make you a hero. So often you're saving something because you're scared of losing, and walking away from an unhealthy marriage, you're not losing a goddamn thing.
You are going to say it louder for the people in the back.
Right. But I think that we all have this idea of like, oh, it failed. And it failed, and I failed, and I failed my, wait for it, kids. Mm. Right. And now I'm a bad mom because I'm breaking their home. And that, I mean, my God, if we could just impress upon people this one idea that your kids will be okay, I promise you. But if you are turning into a miserable person, I mean, Monica, imagine if this never happened, if he never sat you down and had that conversation, where would you be? Now, we're running out of time here, so I want to make sure that I get to the really good stuff. So, guys, as you know, as we mentioned, Monica has her own podcast, but Monica does more than that. Monica created a really unique community of other people who are also choosing to let go. Or maybe they haven't chosen to let go, but they want so badly to let go and be happier and healthier. Tell us about how you created this group.
Yeah, I'd be happy to. So when I was in recovery, I mentioned that I had all kinds of therapy, but my favorite was the support group that I was in. And the reason why was when I showed up to a group of strangers, first off, it was terrifying, right? To be vulnerable, let alone with strangers about something so vulnerable, like my husband being, you know, a sex addict who did XYZ. I sat there and I got to listen to their stories before I shared anything. And hearing my emotions and my story echoed in other people's words, it was the most validating experience. And it was so healing for me. So I always tell people, like, if you have to choose one or your resources are limited, being in community with other people who get it, right? Like, is so powerful. And so that's what really inspired me to create this community after the fact. And I always say betrayal was the best worst thing to happen to me, because it forced me to confront all of this shit that I never would have otherwise. I was forced to. And as a result of that, it changed my entire life, not just my relationship with myself. And you just can't put a price tag on that. So all that to say, I remember how alone I felt when I was going through all of this. And there was so much shame around it too, when there's betrayal in a marriage and you don't leave immediately, right? Like, who would stay with a person like that? Once a cheater, always a cheater.
Totally.
So there was like the shame and judgment of him, and then the shame and judgment of you if you stay.
Right.
And so I just wanted a place for people to be able to safely, openly share about their shit in their life, whatever it is, even if it's not betrayal. Maybe you're still in your marriage and you're having those ugly fights, whether you're like, you know, have a narcissistic father, whatever it is. And so yeah, and I'm no expert, right? Like, I'm not a therapist, but I'm an expert in my own experience. You know, I may not be a sex therapist or a marriage and family therapist, but I know what it's like to go through the process and be married to a sex addict, right? And what it's like to make those choices and what that looks like over time. And so, yeah, in that community, we share, and it's a space to practice being vulnerable and letting yourself be seen authentically, which for me, again, deciding to divorce was the first time really that I had made an authentic decision from my authentic self, you know, rather than that wounded place out of fear. So yeah. And we read personal development books. So I don't know if you'll follow the holistic psychologist. She has this great book called How to Do the Work.
Yep.
So books like that. And I create, side note, I have graphic design background. So I create these fun PDFs that's like homework for us. So we use that as a textbook. So it's essentially like a roadmap for people who are like, okay, I want to heal, but I don't know what to do. Where do I start? And so we just go through this book together. We share it's one thing to read, right? It's another to actually journal, which is so helpful with processing, but it takes it a step further to be able to open up and share with other people, you know, all of that stuff beneath the surface. So yeah, that's kind of a little bit of what happens inside of the community. And it's been such a rewarding process to, you know, turn such ugly pain into some sort of purpose.
You know what, Monica? I like your story. I know, you know, Andrea and I always joke around because I don't love having people on podcasts without, you know, some kind of formal background, training, et cetera. I know everyone now holds themselves out to be some kind of a divorce coach, which not sure I'm even buying that. But I like that what you're saying is, I've been through some really bad stuff. I know other people are going through it too. You're almost just being like a good friend. And a lot of times what I see with my clients is if they can just talk it out, whether they're in therapy, which I love therapy for clients, et cetera, but just talking about what they're going through with a friend who's not judgmental or telling them how to do things is so helpful. So thank you for bringing your voice and your story on our podcast.
Yeah.
And thank you for not being an expert.
Right.
Thank you for not needing to have some sort of stamp behind your name and saying, because of this cute little stamp, I can now help people with this. No, you're just saying, look, this is what I went through and this is what I know. And it's helping people get through something that they feel like they're not going to be able to get through. So you're doing God's work, Monica.
Thank you. I was going to say, quick note about the whole not being an expert thing. You know, I find that if I think about like getting to the other side of the green grass, like I'm not someone, it's so much more impactful, I think, for other people to know that like, hey, I'm human too. I still get triggered. I still lash out. I still struggle with all the same things. I'm not over here preaching from this green grass on the other side. Look, I'm fully healed and here's how you can do it too. And so I think there's so much power in that vulnerability and letting people just be themselves and not feel like they have to get to some like, you know, finish line. So anyway, I'll keep it short.
But speaking of the finish line, bringing it back to how we started this conversation, let's wrap it this way. We started this conversation by talking about this reel that you put out that went viral of your ex-husbands who you went through all of this painful stuff with, sitting at the Thanksgiving dinner table with you, your kids, and your current boyfriend. My God, is that great. Does that not give everybody hope? I mean, look, full disclosure, I'm at a place right now with my ex-husband where I cannot picture him sitting at the Thanksgiving dinner table with my fiance and my kids. Like, I don't know if that's ever going to happen. But also, my story doesn't mean that I failed. It's about what you've done personally that has helped you get to a place where you're okay with any outcome. You're okay if whether you're all sitting together, you're not, whatever, you're FaceTiming, you're not even talking, whatever, because you've done the work on yourself. So I just think that this is incredible. I think you're really inspirational. And I'm so glad that you are doing your part to help other people. Friends, everything that Monica talked about, her podcast, Choosing to Heal, her community, the book club, all of that good stuff, there's going to be direct links to it in our show notes. Also to Monica's blog on Instagram, so you can watch all these viral reels and follow along in her amazing life post-divorce. Monica, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much, Andrea and Morgan. It's been such a great conversation. And I'm so grateful for the opportunity to connect with other people. And yeah, I'm just super grateful. So thank you.
Okay. I liked her. I liked her a lot. So
stamp of approval from Morgan. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. A+ on that one. I liked that she's taking responsibility for her, you know, issues in the relationship or her contributions in the relationship, which I think is really hard to do. Some of my clients never do it, honestly. But if you do it, I think it will only help you in your future life post-divorce. It will only help you probably find a better person next go around and make your relationship that much stronger. So it's a tough step to do. And I certainly don't think that everyone can do it. But seeing that she did it and that it's an option, I like it. A+.
Look, though, that doesn't mean that her actions, I just want to be clear on this, her actions, whatever she did, being controlling or whatever, that doesn't mean that you deserve for your husband to have an addiction and cheat on you and that the porn stuff, right? Like, but there are still things that happen that lead up to these moments. And I think what's so powerful is realizing I am worth taking accountability because if I don't take accountability and I live in this bitter land of, you know, victimville population one, then I'm never really going to be able to move on and live the life that I should be. be living.
Oh, exactly. So, and, you know, when I was talking, I'm not saying that what he did is not totally inappropriate. It is. That's where we start. But we've kind of moved on from that. We know that, you know, she went through some stuff. It was gross. It was ugly. But the point of our podcast today was to figure out how she came out of this okay and what her story looked like. So I'm pretty proud of her for working through that and taking accountability. And I like, you know, that she's putting a community together for people that maybe need a little bit more help.
And I'm proud of all of the people who are listening to this show right now, because even just by clicking on this episode, it means that you're ready to be open and to look at your life. And whether you are already going through the divorce process, or you're on the fence about what to do, or you've gone through the divorce process and you're looking at this like, okay, what do I need to do to move through this? This might have been the first step. So good for you. You're going to get through this. And look, we are here for you. This is exactly why we do this show, to offer you all kinds of information and support. This is the very beginning of season 5 of our show. And we are so grateful that we can bring you a multitude of content this year. This was more of an emotional episode and a real life story. We're going to give you more very specific legal issues, more therapy, more post-divorce information. We are going to give you so much knowledge so that you can get through this process and come out the other side.
Yep. And if you love our show, share it with anyone, even your ex. We don't care. The reason we do this is to help anyone. And not everything in every show is going to help you. That's okay. But we just want to be your divorce best friends here. Somebody that can maybe help you do this or suck a little less. And we know that every day could be a crappy day in your divorce. And some days are better than others. We get it. We always say this is not a sprint, this is a marathon, and you have got this. And that's why we're here for you. If you like our show, please rate and review us. It means a lot to us.
That's right, friends. And we will see you next week with a brand new episode of How Not to Suck at Divorce. And until then, remember, guys, you have got this.
And we have got you, as always.
For more support, please join our private communities on Facebook and Patreon. The How Not to Suck at Divorce podcast is executively produced by Andrea Rappaport.